Our action-packed April continues tonight on Major League Baseball's opening day. We'll have the Reds and Braves at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes. Our ABC Saturday NHL matinee is Ovechkin and the Caps taking on Sid the Kid and the Pens. And then Saturday night, UFC 273 features two title fights in our first Sunday night baseball matchup of the season. Series finale between the Red Sox and Yankees. A little bit of everything for you going on this month. Welcome to Get Up, coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. We got a lot to get to. Shea Cornett, Jordan Cornett with you, and we'll get more from our other guys here in just a minute. Let's start with the game of the night last night, and it went down at the Garden, the Mecca, if you will. The Nets facing off with the Knicks, and the Knicks got off to a great start. Second quarter is where we're going to pick this thing up. Knicks leading by 7. RJ Barrett drives, spins, nice little finish here, and 1. Knicks take a 9-point lead. So less than a minute left in the half here. Knicks leading by 15 at this point. That's Barrett drives, passes Jericho Sims. Knicks up 17 at the break. So let's head to the third quarter now. Would the Nets finally turn it on? That is the question. They're down 13, trailed by as many as 21, but here comes Durant all day long. Fourth quarter now, Nets down 7. Durant passes to Kyrie Irving. Shoots, pull up, deep three, all good. Nets down only 4. So moments later here, Nets down 3 at this point. Irving, nice steal, fast break to Durant. Good again. Nets went on a 24-4 run to pull within 1 of the Knicks late. So 4:15 remaining, game tied at 96. It's Durant again. I mean, the man was unstoppable. He finished with 32 points, 10 boards, and 11 assists. I should specify he was unstoppable in the second half. And so the Nets would add on. Irving's going to wave hello to everyone at the Mecca because he hasn't been able to play there yet. So he's excited about it. Let everyone know what time it is. And the Nets win big. And so at this point, this is what it looks like. The Nets are going to host the Cavs on Friday night. If they win that, and then they beat the Pacers on Sunday, Brooklyn would lock up that 7 seed, meaning they would need to win 1 game and 2 chances at home in the play-in in order to qualify for the postseason. And so, Vince, we hadn't had a chance to get your take on this yet, but it seems like the Brooklyn Nets are putting it together at the right time, especially there in the second half last night at the Garden. What's your reaction to this late season surge, if you will?
Well, it was wake-up time for him, and I had the opportunity to speak to KD that said, do you remember you're Kevin Durant, by the way? And it was time for him to take over and be the man and just take over teams. And you're seeing that now. I mean, I watched him against the Hawks. Yes, they lost the game. He put up 55, but it was just the way he went about things. He asserted himself a little more. And, you know, sometimes he tends to be a little passive early and allow Kyrie to be Kyrie. But they need KD to be this kind of guy. They need KD to be the dominant player he is. And when he does that, good things can happen for them. And by the way, they were playing the Knicks, who are notorious for getting big leads and losing them.
Yeah, right, and collapsing down the stretch. But you're right, Vince. Like, we finally have seen Kyrie and KD put things together. Wendy, is this sustainable?
I don't know. I will say that after all of the drama that they've had all year long, here they are with the opportunity. If they win the game tomorrow against Cleveland, I believe you can pretty much write them in ink as the number 7 seed because they're playing the tanking Pacers on Sunday. So I think they're in great position. But I have to say, they had to use Durant and Kyrie the entire second half in this game. Shea, if you go back and look over the last 2 weeks, number 1 and number 2 in minutes in the NBA, Kyrie and Durant. Over the last few games, look at that. I mean, their playoffs have already started. They're already playing them giant numbers. They're just 4-4 in their last 8 games. So while I sit here and say that they are actually in better position than I could have imagined even 72 hours ago, I still have to point out that their defense is still shaky.
Yes.
And these minutes, I think, are going to catch up with them, especially because they have to go through the play-in before they get into the postseason at all.
But hey, maybe once they get to the play-in or after the play-in, they could get some relief if Ben Simmons comes back.
No. And Wendy can say, I don't know. But I'll sit here and say, I know. I don't believe this team has a chance to make a very deep run. Defensively, we haven't seen a team this deficient there that can just ride 2 stars. And again, maybe we haven't seen 2 stars like this with the basketball that can give them a chance, but not a sustainable one. You can't go through the attrition of a postseason, win multiple 7-game series, play that deep into the summer with what they currently have. I'm actually at the point right now where I'm wondering if it even behooves them to bring Ben Simmons back this year for the postseason. And that probably sounds crazy. Because, look, it's a win-now situation clearly for the Nets. KD's 34 years old. You want to bring Ben Simmons in ultimately. But I have such a lack of belief in them defensively. Well, I'm almost wondering if you go, hey, Ben Simmons, we don't want to put you in another tough spot to really challenge you mentally. Physically, you have issues too. Conditioning isn't there. We haven't seen him for almost a year. To act like he's going to be a savior, fix an entire defense, and this team can suddenly go out there and win the postseason and win a title, it's unfair to a guy that shows us that he's not quite there yet mentally or physically to have that put on him. That's where I'm at with these Nets, where I don't even think Simmons fixes much. Not to take them to a title, certainly. No shot. Not with that defense. He can't fix all of it.
Vince, what do you think?
Jordan, I just want to say one thing, and yeah. I don't think Ben Simmons by far is the savior. But when you watch this Nets team play, because you're asking so much of KD and Kyrie offensively, who's their defensive stopper? Right now, at one point, it was KD. So at least you bring Ben Simmons out there to try to stop them, because everybody's able to drive Mack trucks down the hard. Look, there's no effort. You can get down the center of their paint. So at least if you can at least have somebody to make an effort to try to stop the initial point of attack of the ball, you have a shot. I'm not saying going deep in the playoffs. That's where Ben Simmons comes in. But I agree with you. You know, if he's not mentally ready, you don't want to throw him out there, because you're going to be expecting a lot from him. And everybody's going to say, when you throw him out there, we're going to need you to perform. So I agree with you on that side. But it's just, at this point, defensively, you need somebody who can give you something.
Yeah, but I guess the bigger point is, Vince, it's still not enough. And to me,
Of course,
he can't be a savior when you have two first ballot Hall of Famers there. But he is going to elevate this team. And that's widely believed. But we don't know what his headspace is. Heck, we don't know physically how he is with his back. We don't know how Steve Nash is going to use him. I believe they should use him at the five spot. I think Philly, where they ran into issue, was he's tall, he's unique, he's a point guard. No, he should only push that thing on the initial thrust and transition. Offensively, you shouldn't have to worry about a shot for him at all. Make him a screener, make him a short roll dive guy. But is that package, is that the plan in place? We don't have to worry about the shot at all from Ben Simmons. There's still so many questions. And oh, by the way, they have to be figured out in the postseason. I don't love it. Right. I don't think they have the answers right now.
Wendy, go ahead and tie a bow on this. What are your thoughts?
Delicious, meet nutritious, in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Ben Simmons hasn't played in a year. He's got a back injury, and we're not sure about his motivation. Assuming that he is going to play 1 second, I think is pushing it too far. The Nets can't assume that's going to happen. This is who they've got, and I see a dangerous team, but I don't see a team that can make a long run.
All right, good stuff, right, guys.
I'll say this real fast.
Go ahead.
Hey, when you get ready for the postseason, you go over your defensive schemes that has worked and not. They just need to simplify their defensive schemes. No exotic defenses. Just simplify it and go from there.
Just play a little bit. I mean, we're not asking for much. Just play a little defense, you know? All right, guys, we'll leave this here. Let's move to the NFL, because one of the biggest offseason moves came in Miami when the Dolphins traded for former Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill. Dolphins also bring a new coach in Mike McDaniel. And Dolphins corner Xavier Howard has high hopes for the speedy roster.
I just told Mike McDaniel, I said, man, I got to get my hammies right. You know, we got a lot of speed over there. I feel like a lot of things going to be special here, you know, with Mike McDaniel, you know. He bringing that energy and hopefully, you know, get the offense up the part, you know, to the standard that we expect from both sides of the ball. You know, everybody get the job done here.
Now, first of all, it is hot as heck in Miami, especially at the start of the season. Yeah, you better get those hammies right. That is for
certain.
Better
certain. Hydrate, too.
You better hydrate.
Better hydrate.
IVs, whatever you need to do if you're going to be chasing around or playing alongside Tyreek Hill. But anyways, Kimberly, let's talk about Tua now. Coming into this season, because last year, up and down, quite frankly, the last 2 years, right? Yeah. So now it's put up or shut up for Tua. What is the expectation for him? What are you hearing?
So with Tua, I think we're in this Daniel Jones territory. It's, are you the guy? Are you not the guy? Because the franchises need to know pretty quickly, because every year, as you said, it's been up and down. And every year, you know, going into it, are the Dolphins interested in Deshaun Watson? Is Tua the guy? Well, now the Dolphins have done absolutely everything they can to build a roster. Credit to GM Chris Greer for putting pieces in place for Tua to succeed. They have a new head coach in Mike McDaniel, who has no ties to Tua. You know, he's new. So this is a year, the pressure's on Tua. Last year I thought was a huge year for Tua. This is even bigger because they have a new head coach. And if this is not the year that Tua proves, yes, this is my team, this is my offense, then they can move on.
Yeah, so Kimberly brings up a good point, Canty. It was like last year we were saying this is the year for Tua, and now we're doing it again. It's 3 years in the making. Like, what needs to happen for him to keep his job in Miami?
Well, Tua has to prove that he can lead the Dolphins to being better than third in their division. That would help. You got a rookie quarterback in Mac Jones last year that led his team to the playoffs. Not to mention, the other quarterbacks taken in Tua's draft class at the top of that draft are all ahead of him in terms of their overall development. Not to mention those guys have shown that they're being able to stay on the field for one full season. So those are some of the things that we need to see from Tua. But as far as general manager Chris Greer goes, I got to disagree with Kimberly a little bit. I can't give him too much credit because this is the guy that passed on Justin Herbert. The reality is that if Tua doesn't prove the guy, then the Miami Dolphins are going to not only be in the market for a quarterback in 2023, they're probably going to be in the market for a general manager too. Keep in mind, Chris Greer has eliminated all the excuses as to why Tua can't have success. The head coach that doesn't believe in you, wanted to replace you, we got rid of him. We got you a number one receiver in Tyreek Hill, paid him $30 million a year. Spent big money on Teron Armstead and Connor Williams in free agency, not to mention signing Raheem Mostert and Chase Edmonds in the backfield. Bruh, if you can't get it done with this squad, then you're just not the guy. And to Kimberly's first point, if you got to keep asking the question of whether or not he's the guy, you're eventually going to land on the answer being no.
Yeah, that's true. Acho, so is all the success that the Dolphins could potentially have this year on Tua's shoulders?
It's not. And the reason why is a little bit to Canty's point of this roster is being assimilated not for Tua. It's being assimilated for Mike McDaniel. Really, you could say it's being assimilated for the Miami Dolphins. No matter who's at quarterback, you're building a roster with the fastest wide receiver combo in the NFL. You have Teron Armstead, a dominant left tackle. You have Connor Williams, who's an upgrade at guard. You're building a roster that will have success and life beyond who your quarterback is. Mike McDaniel has a multi-year contract. There's no pressure in a lot of ways on him. And so I love actually how Chris Greer has maneuvered this offseason, bringing in players who are going to make your team better and not putting it all on the shoulders of one person.
Acho, that sounds good, but if you look at the division winners from last year,
the best
quarterbacks won the Dolphins division. So it all comes back to Tua, all of it.
Right.
But, Kimberly,
right,
you want to tie it?
Thank you.
But my point is what they're building, and this is like where I'm going, is what they're building outlives whoever their quarterback is. Right? I get it. Mike McDaniel was on the private jet on his plane, FaceTiming Tua, saying, hey, man, we got you. I'm building this thing around you. I get
Acho,
all of that. But
Acho,
the bigger
you're
picture
have a new guy
is they're,
building
what they're building
it. Everything
outlives,
that they've been doing
what they're
is
building
be a new
outlives
guy,
who their
Tua
quarterback is.
Doesn't prove
they don't
the
have
guy.
A new, they don't have a new quarterback this year, Chris. At the end of the day, they don't. They have Tua. So whether Tua is successful this year or not, it doesn't matter, because in the future, they still will have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Teron Armstead. You're talking about three of the best people at their position. Connor Williams building a better roster. And that's how you build rosters when you want to have success, not just in 1 year, but over the long term.
Yeah, at this point, it feels like Miami's building a roster that if Tua can't succeed, maybe it's the next disgruntled quarterback that steps into place. But we'll
Kimberly
leave this
Martin's
right
face says it all.
I know,
her face says it all. Says it all.
We'll leave this
Let's
here.
Go
maybe
break.
We'll
Let's
visit
go
it
break.
Later on. Coming up, Mac Jones exceeded expectations last year. So why are two of our experts sounding the alarm on Mac's second year? Find out next. Plus, LeBron James is talking about joining forces with Steph Curry. Brian Windhorst is here to tell us what the heck all of that is about. We'll talk about it next. This is Get Up.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Good morning and welcome back to Get Up. Let's go to the NFL, where the Buffalo Bills have locked up Josh Allen's favorite target, Stephon Diggs, with a four-year extension worth $104 million. $70 million in guaranteed money, sources told our Adam Schefter. Diggs is coming off his second straight Pro Bowl season, and so the extension puts Diggs right behind Tyreek Hill's new deal with the Dolphins for the second most guaranteed money among current wide receiver contracts. Devontae Adams rounds out the top three with his new deal with the Raiders, and so these receivers are getting paid a lot of money, but let's focus in on what this means for the Buffalo Bills, because it's not just Stephon Diggs they've locked in for the long term, obviously Josh Allen as well. They added Von Miller, but the road has stopped in Arrowhead, it feels like, the last 2 years. And so how much pressure is on this Buffalo Bills team? Canty, I know last hour you were saying a ton.
No, there's a lot of pressure on them. They're the only team in the National Football League that's returning a top five offense and a top five defense. And it seems like their general manager, Brandon Bean, has gotten rid of anything that could potentially be a distraction. Stephon Diggs, we're going to make sure we take care of your money, because you know we see all of these big contracts going out to the receivers that are in your class around the National Football League. We brought in Von Miller, a pass rusher that could give that front seven a boost. We saw the LA Rams have 50 sacks last year, finished third overall in sacks. They won the Super Bowl. That's a Formula 4 team that has a high-powered offense. So a ton of pressure on the Buffalo Bills to get this thing done with Josh Allen. And so now the ball is in his court in terms of being able to deliver.
So all the pressure now, it feels like, on Josh Allen. You agree or disagree? Acho, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I don't feel pressure when it comes to Josh Allen, right? And I got a chance to play with Josh Allen. This dude, yes, he's big, he's strong, he's physical, but he's one of those guys that applies pressure to the people around him. You've seen him on third and fourth down when the pressure's on in the biggest moment, making the biggest plays. You saw him last year in the AFC Championship game. Even though they lost, right, the biggest moments, he's making the biggest plays. So if there is pressure on Josh Allen, then give me more pressure, because I want that Josh Allen. So the Buffalo Bills, yes, they are my team to beat in the AFC, but this dude applies pressure point blank, period.
But yet still, he can't get past Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, Kimberly.
No,
that's why they
can't
change the overtime rules.
Make it make sense, Kimberly. Make it make sense.
I love you, Sam. I love you. But pressure, this isn't a team is nervous or wilt under the pressure, but there is pressure on these Buffalo Bills. Think about the history of this franchise, number one. Think about the last few years since Josh Allen has been in the league, didn't make the playoffs, then lost in the wild card round to the Texans in overtime, then lost in the AFC title game to the Chiefs, then last year lost in overtime in the divisional round to the Chiefs. Everything goes through Arrowhead, and I even covered last year's game, Sunday Night Football, where the Bills went to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs, and Josh Allen and company was like, yeah, no, we have bigger goals, beating them in week 5 or week 7. This is nothing. Watch what we do later. And they weren't able to beat the Chiefs in the biggest moment. There is pressure on this franchise. There's pressure on Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, because they have a roster ready to win now. And that's why they're locking up Josh Allen. That's why they're locking up Stephon Diggs. Because if you don't, unlike in Miami, if you don't have the guy at quarterback, you are not getting anywhere in the AFC arms race. So they have the team, but they need to be able to get over that final hump, which is something they have not done. That, my friend, is pressure.
Okay, but so they bring in a guy like Von Miller to go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was going to say, notice the point you made. You talked about earlier in the season when the Bills played the Chiefs and they won. And there wasn't this idea of like, man, we got to go beat them again. It's like, dude, this is nothing. We have much bigger goals, much bigger dreams, much bigger aspirations. And some people might say, well, Sam, that's pressure. But it depends on who the person is who's in that box, who's in that arena, right? Like, man, does Michael Jordan have all this pressure? Does Patrick Mahomes have all this pressure? Some people, they're just different. I'm not comparing Josh Allen and Michael Jordan, whatever, but what I'm saying is this.
Internal pressure that you put on yourself, there's external pressure.
Absolutely. So you could call it, you could say there's external pressure that we put on Josh Allen. I'm cool with that. But I don't believe in that Josh Allen is feeling pressure to go and perform. I think there's an opportunity and excitement. And maybe this comes down to our definition of what pressure means, right? Externally, cool. No issues, no argument whatsoever. But internally, within that building, within that facility, within this dude as a player, I don't think he feels it.
Go ahead, Canty.
Here's what I don't understand. The Buffalo Bills are the odds-on favorite to win the world championship this year. There's expectations. Along with expectations comes pressure. Not to mention, you got a quarterback in Joe Burrow who's played in the Super Bowl. You got Pat Mahomes who's played in and won a Super Bowl. You got Russell Wilson in your conference now who's won a Super Bowl. These are all teams that the Buffalo Bills seemingly have to get through to accomplish what Vegas is saying they should accomplish, which is winning a world championship. Yeah. So how in the hell can you say there's no pressure, Acho?
I will say this too. Can I just add?
Because at every hurdle, they're jumping over it, right? This is the last hurdle they get to jump over, right? Like, at every single hurdle, man, you talk about Josh Allen's rookie year. Is he the guy? Is he not? Then all of a sudden, he gets better and better and better. Every single opportunity they get a chance to get over it. And so now you have a young team, a young core, young superstars, a great roster. You added Von Miller. And now it's like, yes, we get to jump over this new hurdle. And so this may be a simple issue of vernacular, right? Okay, well, you're seeing it one way, I'm seeing it another way. But the bigger picture, at least for me, is when I hear the word pressure, I hear, oh no, am I going to be able to do this thing? Pressure, right? This squeezing, this thing that's pushing me down. That's not what these guys feel. That's not what these guys are experiencing. These guys are saying, nah, dude, we felt like we were the favorite last year or the year before. We know what we're capable of. And so no matter what the media says or what the fans say, we know
what we can do. The Super Bowl. No, this is madness. Is Aaron Rodgers under pressure to win the Super Bowl? Yes. Is Tom Brady under pressure to win a Super Bowl after retiring? Yes. It's pressure. It's pressure. None of these guys are wilting under the expectations, but this is pressure.
So everybody's under pressure, Kim. And I mean, if that's the point, everybody's under pressure.
If you're pressure is a privilege, okay? And it depends on how you look at it, right? Like, I feel like pressure is a privilege, and the Bills are at a privilege to be in this situation. But here's the truth. Yeah. Like, they're going all in, the Bills are. They added Von Miller for a reason. The Bills did not turn over Patrick Mahomes in their last two playoff losses. They had only 3 sacks on 92 dropbacks. They struggled against the Chiefs, and so they bring in a guy like Von Miller to hopefully push them different kind of pressure on the Chiefs and get past Arrowhead so they can eventually be the world champs. And so there is, in my opinion, a ton of pressure on the Buffalo Bills this year. But you're right, Acho. It depends on how you look at it. All right, let's leave that right there, because coming up one day after the Lakers were eliminated from the playoffs, we're hearing LeBron talk about now joining forces with Steph Curry. What is going on with King James? We'll talk about it next here on Get Up. To the NBA we go, where the Lakers have been eliminated from playoff contention, setting up a fascinating offseason in Los Angeles. LeBron was asked about who he might want to play with in the future, and here is what he had to say. He said, Bronny is number one on my list. He's number one on my list, and that is who I want to play with for sure. But then he went on to say, and this is where it gets interesting, Steph Curry is the one I would want to play with for sure in today's game. Interesting. So Steph Curry then responded to LeBron's comments saying, well, we could all just live in that fantasy world. So essentially shutting it down, but still, the notion of LeBron just saying he wants to play with his son and then Steph Curry, there's a lot of language here. Wendy, what do you make of all this?
Well, so a little history here. LeBron started sort of patching the distance between him and his old rival about a year ago. And that was, you know, before Steph signed this giant contract to stay in Golden State. There was little sliver of like, well, are we sure that the Warriors are going to offer Curry? And then it happened. So he's been sort of flirting with this for a while. But I will say that also in this show, which he was having fun with, to be clear, he mentioned the affinity he has for Luka Doncic. And if we're going to talk about the concept of LeBron playing with a different great player, the concept, okay, the fact that he mentioned Luka, I personally find more interesting. I always judge LeBron on his actions more than his words. And for the last 3 years, he has drafted Luka on his team LeBron for the All-Star game. He tried to recruit Luka to his brand within Nike, although Luka ended up going with Jordan. And I think that is something that is more interesting, even though I don't think LeBron is leaving LA anytime soon.
If you want to talk about actions, I mean, I feel like LeBron has been flirting with Steph, if you will, at these NBA All-Star games year in and year out. I feel like it started in Chicago. We saw more of it this year. Vince, what do you make of all this?
I mean, it's just, you know, you love to hear it, but, you know, it's wowing, and it's like that what if, but, you know, there's a lot of other things that need to be addressed, obviously, with the Lakers, and, you know, I'm glad Steph kind of nipped it in the bud. Yeah, like you said, he was joking and just talking, but I'm glad Steph kind of nipped it in the bud on his side. Can you imagine, first of all, Golden State not giving Steph all that money? I can't imagine. Let's just say that. But as far as Luka is concerned, I can't imagine that. But just say, as Luka is concerned, you know, yes, it'll be a great pairing, but it's just – LeBron would have to make some sacrifices as far as just dominating the ball, because Luka likes to dominate the ball as well. So that's just the only concern if something like that comes about.
Jordan.
You know what? I can't imagine having Vince's money. I would love to have that kind of money, too. A lot of it's like dreaming of certain things.
You see what these guys are making? Jordan, you see what these guys are making?
Vince, tell me this, because this is the part of me that I feel like maybe fandom comes into it. But I really want to see LeBron say, look, this thing, we fell so flat last year, this past season, which is now coming to a close. And what LeBron has done on the floor has been remarkable at his age and his 19th season. It's really been a differentiator. In a GOAT conversation, you can lean on, well, nobody has done it at this level this late into their career. But at the same time, you could say nobody that's a GOAT has also found themselves on the outside of the playoffs looking in. And because of that latter stage and that latter part, I want to see LeBron lean into. I want these stories to start coming out. I know this is dated, some of these comments coming to the forefront, but I want to hear him talking about how we can unlock Russ, what type of coach we need, what type of GM decisions can be made around other parts. Look, I'm watching the Miami Heat with guys like Max Strus figure it out. I'm watching them do it with undrafted guys like Duncan Robinson figure it out. I want to see LeBron really solidify himself as, look, he is already an all-time great Laker. I don't want to hear he's not really a Laker. The dude won a title. He's a Laker, and he's one of the greatest there. But I want to see the reinvention. I want to see the resiliency of him here. I don't want to really hear about other places. I want to see how he can make this thing right again, because AD ain't going anywhere. Russ ain't going anywhere. My hope is that LeBron's not going anywhere. But what other pieces can they bring in that are savvy moves to elevate this team defensively and get some sharpshooters on the outside and find a way to make Russ work so these Lakers can return? That's the story that I'm rooting for. Those are the comments that I want to hear on the show.
Yeah, because the reality is LeBron controls the narrative. Like, he really does. This is his production company. I don't think it's a coincidence all this was released a day after we found out the Lakers were eliminated from the postseason. So at the end of the day, yes, this could be dated, and maybe he's flirted or put out there that he wants to play with Luka, Wendy, but he's controlling all this.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Yeah, but again, if we're going to talk about reality, and I appreciate the passion that Jordan is speaking with there, the reality is that this is a disaster situation that has no easy fix. It's much more enjoyable hanging out with your friends for LeBron to talk about Fantasyland, which is what he was doing on this show.
What do you think, Vince?
But there is the reality of how do you fix it? You know, because, you know, LeBron always is motivated about what we're saying in the offseason and what didn't happen or how he didn't get it done. So that is a motivation. So the question would be is, how do you fix it? I think before anything, you got to get some defense in there. You got to get some defensive guys. I think one of the biggest mistakes is letting Caruso and KCP go, both of them, if not keeping one of them, because they're great defenders. So you just have to clean up those messes. If you're not going to move from your big three, you have to find pieces that fit in the puzzle to offset some of your deficiencies. That's all.
Yeah, and I hear what Wendy's saying because I try to play GM and tinker with the roster and see where moves can be made to open up something as a supplementary piece. And quite frankly, yeah, it's a disaster. There is no space to do something like that. But there is a way, and I'm of the belief, that you can find a way to make Russ an effective player on the floor again. It's just simply how you use him. And I think that goes back to X's and O's. And I believe if you spread this group out, take five out, play an outside with Russ playing at the five spot, it may sound crazy, but it's a way, it's a reason and an option to explore when there ain't many options with this group.
It's not crazy. Remember, if you remember back, Doc Rivers did something similar with Rondo. They kind of put him in a position where they put him on the box where, you know, it was always help, but he was a great offensive rebounder. So there are different ways that you can use Russ. But Russ still needs the ball in his hand.
Wendy, why do you think it's crazy?
I mean, I'm going to tell you a very uncomfortable truth. For the last 4 or 5 weeks, Russell Westbrook has played very well. If you look at the way he's finished the season versus the way he started, he has played much, much better. And the Lakers have been getting their butts kicked regularly. It didn't even matter. And so that's what I just don't see how they don't have to just try to figure out how to get back into the play-in. As we sit here today, if the Lakers make the play-in next year, that would be an incredible accomplishment. They are 17 games under 500.
Yeah,
getting a little bit better out of Russ is not going to fix it.
Yeah, you just need Anthony Davis to stay healthy, it feels like, at this point, and also LeBron James down
the
stretch.
Well, that's the biggest piece.
If everyone's healthy, then maybe we're talking about something different.
I have to add this, though.
Anthony Davis played half the season.
Yeah, this is the – and they still got outscored by the opponents.
40 games, and they were 6 games under 500. They were a losing team when Anthony Davis was healthy. I wish I had something better to give the Laker fans, but this is the reality.
These poor Laker fans, they've all turned us all off. This is just a problem. So let's move on. But Vince Carter, actually, you can see more of him in that big smile. Explore the expansive world of basketball through his eyes on Vince's Places, streaming now exclusively on ESPN+. All right, let's go back to football here. It's certainly been a very busy offseason in Tampa Bay for the Bucs. And let me recap it for you. After retiring in February, Tom Brady had a change of heart after 40 days before deciding to return for a 23rd NFL season. Brady is the all-time leader in passing yards and touchdowns. The Bucs gave wideout Chris Godwin the franchise tag, if you remember, but worked out a deal 3-year extension worth $40 million guaranteed. Godwin is third on the Bucs all-time reception list, so that's good news, but this is probably not. Bruce Arians stepped down after 3 seasons as head coach and will move into a front office role. Todd Bowles will replace Arians as a new head coach and got a 5-year extension with the team. And then there's Gronk, free agent Rob Gronkowski, and his future remains a mystery. Gronk's 92 touchdown catches, third most among tight ends. Here he is on his future.
If I knew I started, you know, catching some passes, that, you know, my head would have started turning like, oh crap, man, I gotta get back out in the field. And right now, I'm not ready to get back out on that field. I'm not ready to commit to the game of football right now.
All right, so last hour I kind of poked fun at what Gronk was wearing and his demeanor. So I will let it slide this time. But instead, Canty, do you think that the Bucs absolutely need Gronk to kind of go on a title run? Is he the bread and butter to what makes this offense click?
I don't think the Bucs have to worry about finding out whether or not they need Gronk, because Gronk is going to be back. Gronk has played 11 seasons in the National Football League, going into year 12. Guys that have played that long, they'll tell you. They don't want to be in OTAs. They don't want to be a part of the off-season conditioning program. They don't want to do mini camp. They don't even want to do a full training camp. So I understand when Gronk says, I don't want to think about being back out there on the field right now. I'm sure he doesn't. He wants to enjoy the summer. He wants to enjoy the warm weather. He'll get the football once we get closer to the regular season. There's no denying his impact on this offense and what he means to Tom Brady specifically when you consider the impact in the red zone, the side adjustments, all of those different things. But just translating what Gronk just said, he's not ready to show up right now. But I do believe he's going to show up for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2022.
If we know anything about Rob Gronkowski, he will have his fun during this spring
no
and
doubt.
Summer, right?
No I'm doubt.
Just, but in terms of what makes this offense click, Kimberly, having Gronk back in the fold mm-hmm. is imperative for Tom Brady to have success, no?
Yeah, Canty hit on it. When you think about best red zone offenses, the Bucs are it with Brady and Gronk together. Brady's touchdown to interception ratio in Tampa Bay, it's 66-0. With Gronk on the field, it's 48-0. You can't overstate the importance of Gronk as a security blanket to the best quarterback of all time. Now, I think we all can agree the Bucs have other roster holes, and adding Gronk to the mix just doesn't signal this is the team to beat in the NFC. But when you factor in the other guys that they haven't re-signed yet, and the fact that Chris Godwin offensively will be missing for several months, that's why to me Gronk is a big piece, and I do hope to see him on the field in week one.
Okay, so we're showing you numbers right now, what Kimberly just laid out, how important he is in terms of Tom Brady's success. And Acho, I don't know a lot about Tom Brady, but I know if we know those stats, Tom Brady knows that stats. So do you think that Gronk needs to be on the field for Brady to have success this year?
I think he will be on the field, but I think more so there's many question marks in Tampa Bay, outside of roster stuff. There's a question mark at Rob Gronkowski, at tight end. We understand that. Cameron Brate, maybe he'll step up, maybe he won't. But there's a question mark at head coach. Bruce Arians is gone now. Todd Bowles getting his second stint at head coach. There's a co-defensive coordinator situation going on, and we know that Todd Bowles will still be calling plays. What will happen in that scenario? If Tom Brady and the offense is great, like they were last year, number one offense, or at least led the league in passing yards, how will the defense be? Those are my concerns, more than Rob Gronkowski, more than Tom. I'm not concerned about Tom Brady. I'm concerned about what will the overall structure of the team look like now that Todd Bowles is running the operation. I think he's a phenomenal coach, but is he going to have all his focus on the defense? I do not know.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks and a lot of changes going on in Tampa Bay. It obviously started from day one when we heard about Tom Brady retiring, coming back, all the people they need to resign, and obviously now with the head coach. We'll see what happens with Tampa Bay, but we do know that the NFC watered down a little bit. Perhaps that had something to do with Tom Brady coming back. Maybe Gronk will make the same decision. All right, coming up, the NFL draft right around the corner. We've got some bold predictions from our experts. Find out exactly what they are next. But first, a little sneaky hembo here for you. This one's for Buster Olney. Because it is opening day, and so here's the question, Buster, if you can hear me. Which active pitcher has made the most opening day starts? Don't Google it, but sit there and think about it. We'll be right back.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
All right, back to our question from Sneaky Hembo here on Get Up. Which active pitcher has the most opening day start? Today is opening day in baseball, and so Buster, you've had time to think about this. Who you got?
Yeah, so it's not fair that Hembo's asking me that question because he knows my brain is all scrambled on opening day. But I'm going to go with the active pitcher with the most wins, and that would be Justin Verlander.
And Buster, that's why you're the best in the business, because that would be right. Justin Verlander has 12, followed by Clayton Kershaw with 9 and Madison Bumgarner with 7. Very well done, my friend. Look at nice. You didn't even need a warm-up. You're just ready for opening day, and so let's get to it. It is a national holiday for baseball fans. You know, I remember as a kid sometimes, some of my friends, my mom would never let me do this. They would call off. But anyways, I digress. Opening day is finally here, and so we're going to play a little game of Bust a Move. We did it last hour with you. I think it went well, so don't just sit there. Go right ahead, Buster. What do you got? 3 storylines that have you excited for this upcoming season.
So, Shay, I'll keep the theme going. I'm excited to see what's next for the Washington Nationals' Juan Soto. Last year, 145 walks, just 93 strikeouts, second the National League MVP award. Shay, he's just 23 years old. He's the most evolved young hitter that we've ever seen in terms of power, plate discipline, and now he's got Nelson Cruz batting behind him. I'm excited to see the year-long celebration for the St. Louis Cardinals at three future Hall of Famers. Albert Pujols, who should be a unanimous selection one day for Cooperstown. Yadi Molina, the greatest defensive catcher ever. And Adam Wainwright, who I think eventually you'll get in the Hall of Fame. I think the attention on these guys during the course of the year will help energize the Cardinals on a day-to-day basis. It's why I've got them picked to win the National League Central. And number three, I'm excited to see if the Atlanta Braves can repeat as champions. No Major League team has done that since the 1998-2000 Yankees. Big question for the Braves is, when is Ronald Acuña Jr. coming back? Just a few minutes ago, I talked to Alex Anthopoulos, their head of baseball operations. He said they're targeting the first week of May for Acuña Jr. coming back. They won that World Series without him. Matt Olson looks great so far this spring. A member of the coaching staff told me, look, World Series hangover is real. So far, I'm not seeing any of it. The Braves are excited to get going.
Okay, but they don't have Freddie Freeman. How is that adjustment going to go? Let's go on the record here with some bold predictions. Again, it is opening day. When is there a better time to make some bold predictions as we head into the season? So let's start with this one. Who do you think, Buster, is going to lead the league in home runs?
I got Mike Trout hitting 60. Shay, the first major leaguer to hit 60 home runs since 2001. Look, Trout, as he gets older, he becomes more evolved. Like Juan Soto, we were talking about. His command of the strike zone, his ability to get to that high fastball at the top of the zone. And as Hembo told me before the show, there has been a 162-game stretch in his career when he's hit 59. I see Mike Trout, now that he's healthy, having a monster season going 60-plus home runs and leading the major leagues.
Okay, but the real question with that, Buster, is it going to matter for the Angels? Are we actually going to see the Angels in the postseason if he hits 60 and we see Shohei Ohtani do what he did last year? Anyways, let's move on. Speaking of pitchers, give me an off-the-radar pitcher who emerges as a star this season. Who you got?
I got Dylan Cease of the Chicago White Sox winning the American League Cy Young Award, which might seem a little crazy for a guy who had an ERA of about 3.5 last year, but this is someone with incredible stuff. Last year, he led all American League starters in strikeouts per nine innings, and you could see he was putting his whole game together. He had an occasional game where he gave up a lot of runs. He would get beaten up. That muddied down his final numbers, but Dylan Cease, absolutely dominant on the mound for the White Sox.
So I'm going to see more Cease the Day t-shirts in Chicago is what you're telling me, but one thing we know is the White Sox underachieved last year. They were, you know, one of those teams that we picked possibly to go to the World Series, and so here we are again. Can't let you go. Give me your World Series pick. Who you got?
I've got the Braves making it back to the World Series, but then losing to the Toronto Blue Jays. We talked in the last hour about that incredible offense they have. Yes, they lost Robbie Ray, the Cy Young Award winner, but signing Kevin Gausman will help. They have Jose Barrios for the whole year. And this is something to watch, Shay, especially early in the year. The competitive advantage the Blue Jays are going to have because of the vaccine mandate in Canada. Every team that visits the Blue Jays probably going to see 2, 3, 4 really good players not going to be available to them. That may turn out to help the Blue Jays win some games.
No doubt. Those are some great bold predictions. Buster, we know you're already on top of your game here for opening day. We appreciate it. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you later on. Speaking of bold predictions, we're going to keep that same energy here and talk about the NFL draft because we are closing in on 3 weeks away from things going down in Vegas. And so bold predictions is where it's at. Chris, I'll let you start things off. Bold prediction for the draft. What do you got?
I got Malik Willis being the first quarterback that's off the board. Ooh. And I get it. Our very own Todd McShay in his latest mock draft had Kenny Pickett going 6th to the Carolina Panthers. But I believe that there's going to be a team that talks themselves into Malik Willis because of the movement skills. I think he's got the best when it comes to this quarterback's class, and there's no question that he has the best arm talent. Looking at what he did at the Senior Bowl, that practice where there was inclement weather, the reports were that he had no problem driving the ball downfield. So I could absolutely see a team falling in love with Malik Willis and moving up to take him first quarterback off the board.
See, it's already starting with the draft. Like, this is what happens. We just build up these QBs, and they sometimes feel like they came out of nowhere. Not that Malik Willis did that. Jordan Reed, going to you next here, joining in on the conversation. Your bold prediction for the NFL draft.
Kenny, I'm gonna take it even a step further. I think he's gonna go to Detroit at number two overall.
Ooh.
I think with them, you can talk about Trayvon Walker, you can say Kayvon Thibodeau, who are two players that I really like, but in today's day and age in the NFL, you have to have a quarterback that you can win because of. I think Jared Goff is a quarterback that you can win with. He went to a Super Bowl with the Los Angeles Rams, but Malik Willis can eventually turn into a quarterback that you win because of. The great thing about Detroit, they have 9 picks this year, counting number two overall. You have 2 first-round picks again next year, and everybody wants to get excited about the 2023 quarterback class, and rightfully so, but nothing matters in the Lions rebuild until you get that quarterback spot solidified. I'm going with Malik Willis at number two overall to the Detroit Lions.
This is insanity. Sam Acho, I'm going to hope you're going to right the ship here. Your bold prediction for the draft.
So my bold prediction is that Jahan Dotson will be the best wide receiver in this year's draft class. Here's why. I got this from Hembo earlier. Jahan Dotson accounted for 25% by yardage of Penn State's offense. That's the most for any first round graded receiver, number one. Number two, look at where he may be projected to go. Some have talked about Kansas City. Some have talked about Buffalo. Some have talked about Green Bay. Look at the quarterbacks he'd be playing with. And last but not least, the best receivers that we've seen, guys like Devontae Adams. He was a 9th receiver taken in his draft class. Cooper Kupp was a 7th receiver taken in his draft class. Justin Jefferson was 5th. The list goes on and on and on. It's not always about the first guy picked. It's about the best guy picked. I think Jahan Dotson will be that guy down the line.
I'm going to piggyback off yours, as my bold prediction for the draft is that there will be more wide receivers taken in this first round than we've ever seen in the NFL draft. The record is 7, and that was the Larry Fitzgerald year. I believe it was 2004. And so this year, wide receivers more valued than ever in the NFL. And so this is the year we're going to see the most wide receivers go in round one. I don't know, though, if we're seeing quarterbacks taken at number two. Things have gone all over the place. Guys, thank you very much. First Take is coming up next, and they're going to discuss if they like LeBron talking about joining forces with Steph Curry. You can join us for First Take, top of the hour, right here. It is a tradition unlike any other. Thursday and Friday at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the app, we'll have exclusive first and second round coverage of the Masters from Augusta, the year's first major. Once again, ESPN Plus will have featured whole and featured group coverage all 4 rounds, and SportsCenter will have dedicated coverage all week long. We appreciate you hanging out with us here on Get Up. There was a lot of people in and out, but one thing I know for sure, Greeny will be back tomorrow. We'll see you later, everybody.